Hello and welcome to episode 2 of Inside Right Season 3. Today I'm joined by Cody, the common football fan. How are you, Cody?
I had a pleasure to be here, having a good day, just enjoying the Women's World Cup and all its glory, really. Women's World Cup,
we'll get to that in a second. This is how this episode is going to run. I'm going to talk about a bit about you and the podcast you've recently started. The Women's World Cup, of course. I've seen you do so many videos on it. I've loved every single one. I've commented on some as well, you know. The Premier League, obviously this is quite a Premier League-centered podcast, so we will talk about that, as well as your round one score predictions, as well as mine. And then I've got two games at the end. Guess the Age, Women's World Cup edition. All right, so I'm going to give you a player. You're going to guess the age. If you're one under, one over, it's half a point. All right, yep. How does that sound?
That sounds
challenging. Some are either really good at it or they're not great. And then we finish off with a tradition. It's called the Talking Soccer Bollocks Quiz. It's 10 trivia questions. They could be on anything, soccer, yep, or football. We used to do a time. We don't anymore. So you've got time. You can breathe. You can think about it.
There's no time.
Yeah, so there's no time. There's no time limit. So that's how it's going to run today, all right?
Too easy.
Now, first of all, I'm going to start off with this question. Where did your love for football begin?
You know what? This is actually something that I've been thinking about a lot recently, mainly because, look, we'll get into my show later, but there's a guy that I was talking to, and he starts every podcast off with the same thing that yours are doing right now. Where did your love for football begin? So it's kind of made me think about my personal journey, and it's funny in a way because I never got into football from kind of watching it on TV or anything like that, or even going to games. My earliest football memories and where kind of that passion for it started was actually watching my dad play.
Really?
It's really interesting. Like, my dad's not like a massive football fan, but the guy, mind you, great player when he was younger.
Yeah.
He's gonna get a big head when he listens to this back. But I remember being maybe 4 or 5 years old. We're always at the park every weekend watching him play.
Yeah.
Back then over 35s.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, that's where kind of my passion for football began, because I was at a football ground. Like, man, it'd be park soccer, but I was at a football ground every week watching the sport.
Exactly.
And was watching someone so close to me. And then from there, after that, that's when we started to see the Socceroos in the World Cups. So that's where I kind of started watching it on TV. And that's where my mum was the one that actually decided, hey, maybe we should probably take him to some football games. My dad wasn't, my dad was the one that ended up taking me eventually. But my dad was never, he even said growing up, he was never a big follower of it. And I didn't even find out until I was maybe 15, 16, maybe even older, that we actually supported the same Premier League team, Liverpool.
So. Yes, you're Liverpool.
Liverpool yes. fan, yeah.
There we go.
Hasn't probably been the best of times recently, but it turns out, like you said, like, he was probably more of a Liverpool fan, if anything, back in the day, not hardcore or anything, but I grew up a Liverpool fan, didn't realise that he was too.
Yeah,
but
wow.
But it came purely from, my love for football purely came from watching my dad play every week. And it's funny because, like, a lot of my childhood friends come from basically people that my dad played with, their children. I'm now friends with, even growing up still to this day.
Yep.
My fiance, I met through my dad playing soccer because my dad played with her dad.
Yeah.
So I've known her since we were God knows how old.
Yeah.
Like, my parents say that we were kind of introduced at like 6 months old.
Yeah.
But yes, that's what I mean. Like, my dad's football's kind of played such a major part in my life. And the more I think about it, that's really where my passion for it came from.
Yeah, well, out of curiosity, what club did you... Was it around the Shire area?
Oh, no, man. I'm from Western Sydney.
So, are you? Yeah. Okay, so I wouldn't know the Sunday club.
I had an hour drive to get here, man. It was...
apologies.
Perfectly fine. But, AC United, I'm not sure.
AC
like, it is
United.
A bit of a big club.
Let's just chuck Milan on the end of that. AC
honestly,
Milan.
I kind of liked AC Milan a little bit when I was younger because of that reason.
Yeah.
Then Napoli started signing... They went through their period where they're signing all the Spanish players. So I was like, okay, I'm going to lean towards them now.
Fair enough. All right. Well, let's talk through the Common Football Fan podcast. You've just started this. You're 2 episodes in, right?
Two episodes released.
Yep.
One further episode recorded. One's about to be recorded. But very, very much in its early stages.
So what's it about?
Essentially, one thing I've always found, and especially with kind of even podcasts that are centered around Australian football, there's not a lot... A lot of people do kind of the same things, and I'm not going to trash on anyone because everyone that's trying to talk about the Australian game deserves a lot of credit. But I do feel like there's a bit of variety needed. And even in interview podcasts, it's usually you get players on, you talk about their story, you talk about their career.
Yeah.
And eventually that is something I want to do. I'm not going to beat around the bush.
Yeah.
If I got a player on podcast, I'm not turning it down at all.
It's amazing.
But there's also so many people in the Australian game, and not just the high profile people, but a lot of people maybe beneath the surface as well, or behind the scenes, that are playing their part in trying to make this game as good as what it can be in this country, and really focusing on trying to promote, whether it be the A-League, NPL from a club or league perspective.
Yeah.
There's so many people trying to do some good things in Australian football.
Yeah.
And if I can play a part in helping them build their profiles, 100%. Or helping raise the awareness of Australia, well, not raise awareness, that's probably not the right word, but raise the profile of different aspects of Australian football.
100%, like
even a lot of content creators do kind of focus around the A-League. And from that perspective, it is more a fan thing. Marty Marin was my first episode. Brilliant guy, by the way. Great chat. Loves his Premier League as well as Spurs fan, so he'll be happy with Postecoglou at the moment. But
he won't be happy being a Spurs fan, though.
Yeah, I don't think many people have been a Spurs fan. But his passion for his club, that's the sort of thing I want to highlight. But then there's also Australian football is much bigger than the A-League as well. There's so many people within the NPL system that are trying to do their best to try and promote that level of the game. And that's probably an aspect of the game that needs a lot more attention. And we're talking about comparing that to the A-League. And you know, the A-League, I love the league, but it does have a knack for shooting itself in the foot sometimes.
Yeah,
I'm not going to – like, I'm happy to be honest in that regard. I'm not going to say, oh, it's all sunshine and roses. It's definitely not.
Yeah.
But there's so much to love still in Australian football, whether it's – even though it's not perfect, it's still – It's like a beautiful imperfection. There's a guy on my podcast that he had a nice phrase for it. I've got to remember. I'm going to send you a message what it was exactly afterwards. But it's like perfect imperfection in a way. And, you know, it may not be the best league in the world. It never will be the best league in the world. We will never have the top football league in the world, mainly whether it be talent or money-wise.
Yeah.
But this league can still be so much better than what it is. Yeah. And football in this country can still be so much better than what it is. And you see it every time there's a World Cup. The live sites, the passion for football is shown at its best. You've seen it with the World Cup. We're having
75,000
cramming
sellouts
into a core stadium. Or maybe I should be saying
Stadium Australia.
Australia.
Gotta
be careful
with
the sponsorships. But, you know, when things like that happen, you see football at its best. And it's like, even if you can transfer maybe a tenth of that to supporting their local side week in, week out, the country would be so much better for it. And look, there's external influences from a government perspective that hold it back, but there's still so much to love about Australian football and so much that it can progress. So if I can play my small part with this show, I know I do apologize, I went on a tangent about Australian football, I'll bring it back a little bit, but if I can play my small part 100%. With just doing this show, I'm telling my narrative. I'm telling other people's narratives too.
100%.
Yeah. I think that's a beautiful thing. Like, this isn't about me per se. Someone will have the chance to tell my story sooner or later. But that's not what people want to say right now. There's so many other people that deserve to have their story highlighted. Yeah. And if I can provide that for them, whether they be at the peak of their career, at the end of their career, at the start of their career. My second episode, Henley Warner, she's only 19 years old. She's already doing a lot of presenting gigs. I can guarantee you she'll be one of the top presenters in this country.
Yeah.
And I had the chance to talk to her at the start of her career. Yeah. But me getting the chance to tell that story, that's what gives me satisfaction.
Yeah. There you go. What a great answer.
I do have a knack for doing long-winded.
Full circle podcast, Australian football podcast.
I do have a knack for giving some long-winded answers.
No, that's great. No, it's excellent. Excellent. What's the main goal or target goal, no pun intended, with the podcast?
It's funny. I don't know if I've actually got a specific goal per se. Like, I think it's just more of an idea of kind of trying to play my part
in
the Australian football ecosystem. But I guess if there's one thing that I could say I'd love to achieve, if I have someone on the podcast and let's just say someone's watching it, they see someone that's on my pod, that person then gets further opportunities because I've helped raise their profile a little bit.
Yeah.
Or that person then gets a bump in subscribers or viewers or whatever their goals are. If I can play a part in growing their platforms, one is only going to grow my platform because then they'll reciprocate and help promote my stuff. And, you know, that's good for me on a personal level, but then them being able to do more with what they do, that further helps the profile of Australian football. It sends us back to trying to grow the game at the end of the day.
Yeah.
As long as I'm playing my part in doing that, I'm always going to be satisfied. Like, I don't necessarily have a goal, like, in terms of numbers-wise or in terms of where I want to go-wise. Of course, I'd love for my podcast to be professional and I get paid for it and maybe sponsors come and back it up. Yep. If anyone wants a sponsorship opportunity, I am more than open. I'm happy to get some money. Happy to get some money in. But, no, that's secondary. At the end of the day, if I can help, if I play my part in growing the game, 100%. I'm doing my job.
And the rest of it will come.
Exactly.
It's a long-term thing. I did an interview the other day about the podcast. It's 1 year old. The podcast is 1 year old now, and it's a long process.
100%.
You know, it's not long, though, in your mind if you're doing the right things. Mm. If you're just trying to share your love for football, the rest of it will eventually come.
100%. And look, we all play our different parts in the ecosystem. Obviously, you're doing the more Premier League Central stuff, and we still need that in Australia. I know Nick Stav's another one that does it brilliantly. I've only had a few interactions with him, but he seems like a lovely bloke.
Yep.
Obviously, my part's more focusing on the Australian, the domestic game, and it may not get the same numbers as someone that is doing that Premier League stuff, but one, there's going to be those different expectations, and two, if I can do as well as what I can with what I do, then I'm going to be happy.
Yeah, awesome. Fantastic. Speaking of love for football, let's talk about the Women's World Cup. I know you've loved it so far. What's your thoughts, Cody?
Honestly, I've ventured into the women's game kind of in an official capacity maybe 2 years ago. It was when I started the Common Football platform, Common Football Fan platform. It used to be like just an Instagram page where I used to post like scores and team of the weeks. I still do that part. But
score predictions.
Just, like literally stuff like that. I used to do a few write-ups, which is how I ended up kind of working in the journalism space. But yeah, so I've only really been in that space. I've been very new to it. And I think one of the best compliments I've received has been, unlike some people that enter it, I've done my best to kind of talk to people within the space already, get to know the sport before I really start expressing my opinion in a very, you know, I won't say forceful way, but like I've done my best to kind of get word of what I think out there.
Yeah.
But I never wanted to do that without kind of learning about the game first. And I wouldn't say I didn't watch a single A-League women's game before I started following women's football and talking about it. But I definitely didn't do it in the same way I'd watch the A-League men's or the Premier League or stuff like that.
Yep.
But yeah, in the last 2 years, it's been a journey. It's really culminated into the excitement that I've had for the Women's World Cup because now I've gotten myself 2 weeks off work.
Yeah, I've cha-ching.
It's beautiful. It's best when it's annual leave and you actually get paid during that time.
Yeah.
That's even better. But I've had the opportunity to go to Suncorp, I've had the opportunity to go to Amy.
You're going to Brisbane on the weekend?
Going back to Brisbane on the weekend. Like, I'm going to be able to look back on this in 10, 15, 20, maybe even more years and go, I lived a proper World Cup experience in Australia. And we don't know when we're going to have this opportunity again. Like, you can
men
argue
or
about
women's.
There's obviously debate about men and women's football, which one's bigger, yada, yada, yada. I don't like to entertain that sort of stuff.
I don't like to compare.
It's football. It's football at the end of the day. One may be bigger than the other, but you can still enjoy both the same way.
Yeah, 100%
agree. That's the way I believe it. And I can sit there and say I've had a full World Cup experience.
Yeah.
So for me, that's the best thing I could have gotten out of this,
yeah,
I guess. So yeah, 100%. I've enjoyed it. I've gotten into it. I've learnt a lot more about other women's football national teams. Obviously, when the Men's World Cup comes around, everyone knows everyone. Like, you're talking about Morocco being the story of the Men's World Cup. You kind of knew who half those players were already.
Whereas Hakimi, as an example.
Even Amrabat.
Amrabat.
Ziyech, I'm pretty sure. I don't know if he actually.
Ziyech,
He ended up in the World Cup side as well. But now you've got the Moroccan women's team. And look, a couple of the names escaped me. But you've got the lady at the back who is the first female footballer to go to the World Cup wearing a hijab.
Yep.
There's little stories like that. You go to Panama, you got the story of Mata Cox.
And
that free kick. I was at that game. I was actually at the end that she scored the free kick at. I have a knack for not wanting to pull my phone out and be one of those people filming during a game.
Agreed.
And I sincerely regret not doing that. Because if there was one goal that I would have loved to have my pod filming, it was that. I've got the memories of it, but it was 2 minutes into the game. I thought she was going to cross it, for God's sake. Like, look how far out she was.
Well, was she like 30 metres out?
Or maybe 30, 35. Like 35, you'd be around that mark. And, you know, I've never, like, funnily enough, the last time I saw at an international level someone score a free kick from that distance was the under-20s Women's World Cup against Australia. We were playing the host Costa Rica. I can't remember who the lady that scored for Costa Rica. But it was 20 minutes into the game. Australia was dominating. Costa Rica got up one end in front of 20,000 people.
Yeah.
Hit a one from 35 metres out. and the place went nuts. Lucky Australia went on to win.
Yeah.
But I hadn't seen something like that since then. So it took me by surprise, I guess. But there's been so many beautiful storylines, so many beautiful things to see. And the fact that we're able to enjoy it in our own backyard.
Yeah.
It's truly special. It's
special. Exactly. 100%. It's just, it's like World Cups are amazing, no matter where they are. It brings the, I always say there's two events which truly bring the world together. The Olympics and the Men and Women's World Cup.
100%. And right? You're seeing it more with the Women's World Cup, like it used to really only be.
Yeah.
Those progressive nations that really want to provide women a platform to succeed. But now we're seeing nations that aren't traditionally in that space. Like, you know.
Well, Jamaica had to do a GoFundMe to get
here. That's something that still bewilders me. And the fact that they were able to play the way they were
around
and
16.
Produce what they could. But you're seeing even like a team from the Arab world.
Yeah.
Now being able to be on that stage, that's going to be massive for women's football in North Africa, in the Middle East, because you'll see other nations go, okay, Morocco's doing that. Now let's try and be competitive ourselves.
Yeah.
It's only going to have a positive flow-on effect.
Exactly. And I think this is the perfect, maybe biased, but I think this is the perfect place to do it
in Australia.
Yeah.
Not just because of the environment that we create on a social level, but I just genuinely believe this is the best country in the world.
Yeah, no bias.
No bias, not at all.
Definitely not. Players you've been impressed by so far?
Outside of Australia, because I'd say that basically all 23 players that play for the Matildas.
It's funny because on my sheet I've been going Australia and not Australia. So give me your top three favourite Matildas in this campaign and then three players outside of the Matildas.
Oh, it's so hard to narrow this down.
I know.
It's a tough one. I think Hayley Rice has got to be the one you point out. I think she's arguably been the best player of this tournament.
Yep.
And it's funny because after the Nigeria game, I put up something about who I'd want to see play against Canada.
Yeah.
And I had Hayley Rice on the bench. And then she came out and scored a brace in the first half. So someone took that personally.
Yep.
I say that like she saw it. But the fact that she did well in that game, she was even good. She even did her job quite well in the Ireland game. The last game against Denmark, she was brilliant again. Caitlin Ford as well. I'm not putting her in my three, but that's just another one that we can kind of mention as well because she's been brilliant too. But Hayley Rasso, for me, you know, especially in the last two games where we really needed someone to step up and be a hero, she's taken that on her shoulder.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny because it's almost in a galactical sense and fitting considering where she's going to be playing now.
Yeah.
I'd say Katrina Gorry, fantastic story behind her as well, considering, you know, she did have, obviously it's been a bit of time since it's happened now, but, you know, giving birth to Harper and going through her career, raising a child as well. Obviously she's got a partner now to help out with that. But the fact that, you know, she was able to come back so quickly after that, play at the level she is.
Amazing.
And fantastic. She's I was skeptical when we were saying she was going to be in the Asian Cup squad. I don't know if I thought she was ready to be at an international level again. Yeah. Obviously she was playing well in the A-League Women's, but you know, it is another step that you've got to take. But then she came back in for the New Zealand friendlies and from there she's been indispensable.
Brilliant. Yeah.
And third one, and it's probably been the one that's taken me by surprise the most because I thought she was genuinely going to come into this squad as a reserve. And it's Claire Hunt. The fact that, you know, she is still an A-League Women's player. I was watching her for free, essentially, playing in the middle of fucking Wanderers Football Park, a training ground in front of, what, 300 people or so. And I watch her in the Matildas now. She's genuinely a world-class defender.
She's been better than Kennedy.
I'd say so as well. I bring it back to that video I made about who should start. I got a lot of hate for saying that Kennedy should be the one dropped for Polkinghorne. I'm glad she wasn't. Kennedy's a fantastic footballer, and I wouldn't say that in any form of malice. I think Kennedy's a great player.
Yeah.
I just thought she struggled a bit against Nigeria, and if we're going to bring the tenacity Polkinghorne can offer, if I'm dropping either Kennedy or Hunt,
I'm dropping Kennedy.
And that's probably the biggest testament that you can give to Claire Hunt, because it's not because Kennedy's a bad footballer, it's because Claire Hunt is that good.
Yeah.
And
a World Cup's do or die.
Yeah, and you talk about do or die, the knockout game. There was one stage where Claire Hunt kind of had the ball literally in a six-yard box, a player pressing her, and instead of, you know, classic, you know, when in doubt, kick it out.
Yep.
She passed across the goal in front of where this player was coming. Everyone around me had this collective breath, that collective gasp. Yeah, that.
I heard it on the TV.
I'm sitting there, so even the two guys that I was with, they were doing the same thing. And I'm kind of looking at them going, notice how I didn't react at all.
Yeah.
I have that much faith in her that I can see her do something as risky, and some people would even say stupid as that.
Yeah.
And have full faith that she's going to pull it off.
Yeah.
That's how much confidence I have in her. And the fact that I'm having this confidence in a player in the squad that's probably, one, the least profile player, and two, playing at the lowest level, that's a testament to where she is. And the word on the street is she's going to be an Everton centre-back come end of the tournament, ever since picking up a bloody good player there.
Yeah, there you go. Also, Liverpool moment. I think Katrina Gori plays a little bit, not a lot, not completely identical, but a little bit like Thiago.
You know what? It's a fair call.
Same structure. Build, you know.
Look,
you know, passes a ball, can ping a ball from anywhere.
Got that work rate in a Klopp system as well. Yeah. I see what you mean. It's an interesting comparison. Three players international as well. I know I mentioned Marta Cox.
I was going to forget that, so thank you.
No, man, look, this tournament's bigger than the Matildas. It's about having the world here, and I think
100%.
I actually had this conversation with Alicia Canavas. She does work with SEN. And one thing that she came to Front Page Football about and said, now I want to do work with you around the Women's World Cup, but I want to do it about the whole tournament. I don't want another thing where we're just going to talk about the Matildas.
Yeah, Matildas-centred. You don't want that at a world stage.
And you know what? She was brilliant coming on because she was able to provide a lot of insight into those African nations, and everyone's been surprised by them.
Yeah.
She wasn't. So, you know, bloody fair play to her for that. But if there's three players that have really stood out for me, Linda Caicedo has to be the number one.
Yeah.
I was at that game where she scored against Germany as well. You know, one touch in, inside, outside.
Boom.
Ping at top pins. Absolutely fantastic. Inside right, I think she hit.
Yeah, she hit it inside right, guys. Hit it inside right. Linda Caicedo, we'll get you on next.
Oh, man, you'd be doing well. That
you would be doing great, wouldn't we?
She's definitely number one for me, and the fact she's only 18 years old as well, playing for Real Madrid, a nation on her shoulders. I'm not sure if you actually know this stat yourself, but she has scored at 3 World Cups in the last 12 months. So she's been at the under-20s, under-17s, and now the first grade Women's World Cup, and
thank
scored
you for
it all three of them.
I did not know that.
Yeah, wow. I remember. It's funny, actually, because the last time, Australia may very well come up against Colombia soon.
Yep.
If they go past England, we go past France. It may be a little bit unlikely, but it's a possibility.
It's a possibility.
The last time I remember her playing against an Australian side was in a friendly against the under-20s, which we won. So good omens there. Even
good
though
omens.
She's come up to the first grade side, I don't think anyone from that under-20s has made the Women's World Cup side. So, you know, going on a fitted tangent there. Yeah. Second one, I've got to say Marta Cox. And that's purely because it might be a bit of recency bias or bias because I saw her in person and what she was able to do on a football pitch. She's one that I'm saying if an A-League club isn't trying to sign her, they're only doing themselves a disservice.
100%.
She's not playing at too high a level, but she's shown in this tournament the way she's been able to
quality.
Carry a nation on her back as well. You know, lead it at only 26 years old, which is still fairly young for a captain.
Yep.
Lead her nation and be able to produce what she has in the way that she did.
Yep.
Not just that, like you talk about the free kick, but even that game, the flair that she produced, she'd be exciting for anyone.
She's threatening.
To watch. She's threatening. And you put her in an A-League side, I'm not going to say she's going to be the best player in the league, but she'll, one, be up there, and two, she'll bring people in because people want to watch her play because she's 100%. That entertaining.
Yeah.
Last one, Dumone from Haiti. I've become a Haiti fan after this World Cup purely because I've just loved watching her. Her performance against England in the first round, I've never seen.
You're going to have to remind me on who this player is because my Haiti knowledge isn't that great. But
look, I don't blame
position?
You. She kind of plays as a 10, a little bit up front. She's number 6.
Yep.
But I'm not sure how much you're cussing your mind on back to the England game, but they only won that game 1-0.
One
penalty.
Georgia Stanway. Yeah.
Georgia Stanway. Yeah. But every time Haiti went forward, they looked threatening. And every single time they went forward, they were pinging it to Dumone.
Yep.
And then she was creating everything else herself.
There you go.
I've never seen an individual performance like that, considering Haiti is a very, very small nation.
Yep.
I don't blame you for having a limited Haiti knowledge. Yep. I have limited Haiti knowledge. I know this one player, and she's made me fall in love with the country.
Yep.
So that's a testament to her. But that day, like, that's a performance I'll never forget.
There you go.
I think that's one of those ones you'll look back on, and when she's getting a move to Lyon soon, I'm pretty sure, but you'll look back in 10, 15 years when she's probably won multiple Ballon d'Ors, one of the best players in women's football, and you'll look back and go, she announced herself in Australia.
There you go. There you go. Here's the thing, right? And I will get to this now. Brazil out. Germany out. Italy out. Big upset. America's out.
Canada
right?
as well.
Canada as well. Exactly. Alexandra Popp. I'm a big fan of her. I think she got 4 goals.
Yeah.
She was going to be one of my top 3. And I just like her as a player as well. But she's knocked out, so I can't really say her as honestly, a highlight for the whole tournament. It's funny
because if I was looking at the best performers of the group stage, she's probably still up there.
Yeah.
But, you know, you did take a relative to what her country ended up producing, and unfortunately she was probably let down by... It's funny because I don't actually look at Germany and think they played badly. The Colombia game, they were very unlucky.
Yep.
The South Korea game, they were probably a bit unlucky as well. But when they really needed to come back into that South Korea game, suddenly every single ball was going to pop and they were kind of going, here's the ball, go do something with it.
Yep.
And you can't, if you're in a do-or-die situation, you can't do that.
Yep.
We've seen it so many times with Australia, with Sam Kerr, where we'll be their backs against the wall needing a result. South Korea as well, when I'm in the Asian Cup. You know, we kind of relied on Sam Kerr to just produce a moment of magic and, you know, we found that. The same faith. Germany, I say they didn't play bad, and I've said this already on record. They're not knocked out because they're underwhelming this World Cup. They're underwhelming because they didn't step up in the moment that they needed to.
And I think that's got a bit to do with arrogance.
Might be.
I say that just in the sense that these are big nations of, in the women's game, are powerhouses,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't think they were expecting for these little pocket rocket countries to get into the Women's World Cup and really shock them.
It's funny because I had someone message me. Now, mind you, I'll say this, I'm not a betting man myself. But someone messaged me saying, oh, do you got any betting advice for the World Cup? And the first thing I said to him was, don't bother backing any underdogs because the gap between the top and bottom women's football teams are too far for anything to really be produced in the same way we saw in the Men's World Cup. So,
Wrong were you?
I've never been more wrong in my life, but I've never been more happy to be wrong.
Exactly. Yeah. So. There you go. All right, let's go. Favorite game so far? Australia? Not Australia? Favorite. I think we got the same game for Matildas, right? Canada, would you say?
I'll tell you what, that's basically Boyd because I was in the stands in that game.
Yeah.
I have never lost my voice at a football match like that before. It's a testament to Melbourne because, you know, everyone talks about the OSM and the atmosphere they're able to produce, obviously, before the whole thing happened with the Melbourne Derby last year. But there was truly something special about being in that stadium, the amount of people that were on their feet trying to create some noise and the right time to do it as well because it was a do or die match. And, you know, maybe in a way, if the stadium wasn't like that, maybe we don't go through.
Yeah.
You never know. It could be a completely different game if it was in Sydney in front of 75,000 people at a core stadium sitting down doing nothing. Unfortunately, that's what the vibe was like in Sydney. But that game, you know, obviously it's a favourite because of the result we were able to produce. But on a personal note as well, I've also never been able to be as active or enjoy myself in a football stadium as I did in that game.
Yeah.
It was nuts, and that's something that I will take with me forever.
There you go. And you know, as a Liverpool fan, Anfield is the 12th man. Oh,
100%,
right?
Yeah.
And Australia had a 12th man against Canada.
And it's not something you see in Australia very often as well, where you're able to produce an atmosphere 12th in that
player,
sense.
I should say. 12th player. 12th player, 12th man.
Look, I don't think the people in women's football get too pressed about it.
I don't think so.
It's not an issue, but they'll say it themselves. The stands is what... Yeah, that was what was able to spur them to victory. I ran into Tony Gustafsson at the airport, actually, the next day.
I saw that.
I got a cheeky photo with him, but like, went, 100%. But I got a photo with him, and like, when I went to say thank you, my voice is cracking like anything. Yeah. Like, I sound like a 12-year-old boy going through puberty.
Tony.
Yeah, literally. And I'm like, oh, sorry, man, my voice is still messed up from last night. And he's like, I heard you guys in the stands. Thank you so much for what you did.
Yeah.
So he felt it himself. And Tony, you know, he loves the conversation. Like, that photo, it looks like he got a photo with me.
So, PR machine,
that guy. But you know what? Brilliant bloke. And when he gets decisions right, he's a good coach as well.
I think so. And historically, I've said my fair share of comments about Tony Gustafsson.
I think everyone's said their fair share of comments. It was funny, actually, because there's been times where I've vehemently opposed decisions to him, but still said, I'm happy to see him continue.
Yeah.
The only time where I've really said, maybe we should consider looking elsewhere was the Canada series in, I think it was September last year.
I went to that game and I was not impressed.
I wasn't impressed either. That was where I kind of said, we need a change because it didn't look good going to the World Cup. We had the game against South Africa. I think we just kind of needed that different spark. We just needed a game where we could kind of get there, win, and get the confidence back. And we didn't. We did it in a good way.
There you go. There you go. Favorite non-Matildas game this World Cup?
I'll tell you what, I'm going to give two answers for this. One that I went to, one that I didn't went to, because the Germany-Colombia game, I've never experienced something like that in my life. I'm not sure if you were at that game.
I wasn't, but yeah.
But the atmosphere that the Colombians were able to create was so, so special. And I had my fiancée with me that game. It was the first game I was able to take her. A lot of the other games I've been on my own, I think I've only been able to get her to one other game. But I'm glad I took her to that game because she even said, like, this is nuts. Like, this is something that she's never experienced. And yeah. she's not, like, a massive football fan the same way you or I are.
Yeah.
Like, she'll watch it. She'll enjoy it.
She'll appreciate it.
Yeah, she'll appreciate it. But I think even she was able to see, oh, my God, this is something special. This is, like, this is a religion for them. Like, we're going through entertainment quarter beforehand and there was packed, there was music, there was everything. And just that whole day and then to see Colombia not getting away with the victory. Like, I wasn't sure who I was going to support going into that game. By 10 minutes in, I was on the Colombian bandwagon.
Yep.
The other game, and this is for very selfish reasons, USA Sweden. That one I watched on TV, but I went to that game going, I really hope USA lose.
Same here. I want Sweden to win.
Like, and the manner that they did it as well, because I said some choice things about the USA in a podcast leading up to that game. I said, this is the worst that I've ever seen the USA play. That Sweden game, they were brilliant. They played fantastic.
Yep.
But Musovic, one of the best individual performances I've ever seen from a goalkeeper, particularly in the female space I've ever seen in my life. And the fact that she's more of a backup at Chelsea, that is nuts.
Yep.
But everything about that game, the fact that the US were playing well and still ended up getting knocked out, I think it was a beautiful culmination and the manner that the game ended in as well. It's one of those moments where you look back in 10 minutes and go, what the hell did we witness that day?
Yeah. I want to talk about a player in particular, Rapinoe. Thoughts on her World Cup, and when she took that penalty, Dad's like, she's Rapinoe, she's going to get it in. I was like, nah, she's missing this.
She gets a lot of hate because she's very outspoken. I've got personally no issue with the way she's an activist.
Yep.
You know, she talks about a lot of key issues, especially in the women's football space.
Yep.
And she will forever go down as a legend, particularly in that space. But it may be where I entered kind of really getting into women's football and watching it. I've never been impressed with her as a player. Yeah. And it could very well be because I've watched her at the tail end of her career. I didn't really maybe see her at her height.
Yeah.
But I remember the 2019 World Cup. She went through, I think she ended up getting the golden boot. And, you know, I'm trashing on a player that got a golden boot in that World Cup. But 90% of the goals I remember scoring were from the penalty spot.
Mm.
So, you know, good on her. Makes more sense why your dad was saying, she's Rapinoe.
Yeah.
She's going to score this. Yeah. She probably should. This World Cup, same thing. You know, she's been a bit part player. There's been other players that have overtaken her and there's been better players that have overtaken her. But I saw her come into that game and I wasn't filled with confidence that she was going to do anything.
Yeah.
So, you know what? It's a poor World Cup from her, but there's never once been a time where I've been impressed by her as a footballer. And it's funny because it's probably the inverse to how a lot of people see her, because people probably think, oh, yeah, she's a decent footballer, but, you know, you get your right wing people that sit there and go, oh, I can't stand what she says. Yeah. She should shut up, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
Like, she should talk about that sort of stuff. There's that argument to have that women should be paid better than what they are. And the fact that she's going to fight for that so vehemently.
Fair enough.
It's a full credit to her, and she should keep doing that, even post-football. But I can't say how I like her as a footballer.
Yeah, there you go. Next player I want to talk about, Marta. Breaks my heart for her to be out so early.
I thought Brazil would go far in this tournament purely because they would have been spurred on by Marta's last World Cup. I didn't think they'd go on to win it, but I did think that she was going to inspire her side in the same way Messi inspired Argentina.
Yeah.
You know, South Americans, they love their idols and they will die for their idols. And I really thought that's what we were going to see in this World Cup with Brazil. And I don't think we've seen them play bad, but I don't think we're also expecting Jamaica to come with a similar desire to really prove themselves. And, you know, their story is just as fantastic, or maybe even more fantastic. But, yeah, look, it's interesting because, you know, no one wants to see Marta's career in that way, especially at a World Cup level in the group stage. She said it's going to be her last World Cup match in her career is going to be in Melbourne. That's something we can remember forever.
Yep.
But yeah, it's interesting, like that scenario playing out on our shores again as well. But it's disappointing.
Yeah, she didn't get many minutes either.
Look, she's at that age where, and I was speaking to a Brazilian female journalist as well, Olga Bagatini, and she said she was hopeful for this World Cup because Brazil's now not just Marta, where they've got so many other good players that they can rely on, and it's why she was probably seeing more time on the bench and coming into the game to impact it.
Yeah,
but it's similar to Germany, where it's not a sense of Brazil have gone out of this World Cup playing bad. It's just that on the day, they were outshone by an opposition that clearly wanted it more.
Yep.
And in the moment they needed to step up, they didn't.
Yeah, it comes back to, I think they would have went into the game obviously wanting to win, but thinking, we're Brazil. right? Yeah, we're Brazil.
It's Aura.
And they're
it's Aura.
And they're Jamaica, right? Yeah. And Jamaica went, hang on, we are Jamaica, and we're going to give it everything to try and beat you guys.
If you ask my co-host on our World Cup podcast, that we're doing, Matt Olsen, brilliant guy, by the way, he spent 4 minutes praising the Swabi sisters in a way I've never heard anyone praise a footballer before.
Yeah.
It's honestly like, I'm going to show you the 4 minute clip of this, but anyone can check out the Front Page Football socials and see him just in the minute that we were able to actually post how much admiration that he had for what these girls were able to produce. But genuinely, like, I can't disagree with him because they were fantastic. Yeah. They've been fantastic this tournament. They were in particularly fantastic on that day.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, the big question. Who's going to win it? I know you said Matildas from the very beginning.
I did, and I can't back away from it.
Yeah.
If I'm going based on what I'll say in this tournament, it's funny because I think there's so many different ways this could play out, and I think it's purely going to come up with who Matildas face on the day or who anyone faces on the day.
Yeah.
I think from the New Zealand side of the draw, it'll be between Spain or Japan.
Yep.
If it's Spain and Spain are playing the Matildas,
yep,
I think Spain win that game. No, I think Australia win that game.
Yeah.
If it's Spain against either England or France, I think this is where Colombia's journey ends. I'm probably going to eat my words after Saturday, but you know what? I'll put it out there in the universe. If it's either England or France that Spain play, Spain beat them. If Japan make the final, the inverse, I reckon. Japan beat Australia, but either England or France would beat. So it purely depends on how the tree goes. It's so complicated.
It depends how it goes, right?
It's a game of rock, paper, scissors.
It is.
Anyone... Team strengths are more suited to other teams' weaknesses and then vice versa, yada, yada, yada. But it's purely going to come down to how, you know, these next few games play out. And I don't think I'm going to officially say who I think will win a final until I say that. I said Matildas before the World Cup.
And you're back.
I still think we're in with a shot. We're building into this tournament ever so slowly. And no matter what happens now, we've got to play three massive teams.
Yep.
They're the games the Matildas step up for. So I think we're going to see the Matildas purely at their best. And I think that's something we haven't seen yet in this World Cup. Yep. So we're every chance of winning it. And that part of it is so exciting for this country.
Yep. Okay, I'm going to tell you something which is interesting, which I realized on the train the other day. Our run has been pretty similar to Argentina when they won the World Cup in the men's. Let me explain.
Yeah, I'm going to sound an explanation here.
Yeah, now, this is more of just a comedic explanation. I'm not being really serious here. But, you know, just some slight similarities. First of all, Argentina lost to a green team, which Saudi Arabia, which they weren't expecting to lose to, right? So did Australia. They lost to Nigeria, which was, you know, relative surprise. And then Argentina beat Mexico, another green team. Australia beat Ireland, a green team. And the last game of the group was Argentina versus Poland, a red team, and Australia, Canada, a red team. And both round of 16 have included an Australian team. There you go.
Oh,
and both winning teams scored 2 goals. So there you go.
Couple of laughs. It's funny because, you know, the comedic side, hilarious, yeah.
Yeah.
But in the same sense where you have that shock result in the group stage and, you know, you may not see them at their best before this stage of the tournament. We never saw Argentina at their best at that stage of the tournament. Either. So, you know what? If we go against France and we beat them on penalties, I'm calling you an oracle, mate.
Yep, there you go. Yeah, imagine if we beat France on penalties.
I don't think I could take those nerves, honestly.
And then remember Messi's assist against Croatia in the semi-final when he was on the wing and then he came in and he passed it in. I forgot who scored, but someone tapped it in. Caitlin Ford on the wing, dribble past everyone, tap it into Mary Fowler. Bob's your uncle.
I'll tell you
semi-final.
What's the beautiful thing about that. We're not talking about Sam Kerr as well.
Exactly. Exactly.
Like we're starting to realise we are so much bigger than just one player.
I think that's our biggest strength. We're not relying on one player.
Yeah, 100%. Yep. I've said it for years now. The more we rely on Sam Kerr, the worse we'll be. Sam Kerr is a great player, but the reason why she's so great at Chelsea is because she's got a side around her that don't just play to her. She just complements the team. If we play Sam Kerr in the same way, you know, you're talking about players like Caitlin Ford, Hayley Russo, Courtney Wine around her. She can complement that. And the fact that you're talking about someone complementing that, and they're also the best footballer in the world,
yeah,
it's only a positive.